Case for argument, Coolzer v. Biomet, Mr. Rosenberg.
May it please the Court, Lawrence Rosenberg for Appellant Horaeus Coolzer. There are three primary reasons that I want to address today why this Court should reverse the lower court's rejection of Horaeus' 1782 request. First, the lower courts substantially erred in their legal analysis of Factor 3 under Intel, whether there are proof-gathering restrictions in Germany. There plainly are not, and that was error. Secondly, the lower court's rationale directly conflicted with the twin aims of the Intel court and of the statute, both to provide liberal discovery and efficiently do so, and to provide examples of liberal discovery to foreign nations. And finally, the overbreadth analysis performed below was both infected by the first two errors and also erroneous in its own right, because the magistrate judge refused to try to narrow the requests to allow some to go forward. Requests number 1 through 4 were never produced, notwithstanding that everyone agreed that they weren't overbroad, and the requests as ultimately narrowed were plainly not overbroad, in fact are more narrow than just about any request.
Can you present any evidence about what they would have to do to comply with the discovery request, how many lawyers they'd have to hire, how many documents they might have?
Biomet presented zero evidence on that, and of course they bear the burden of proof in demonstrating overbreath, and that's a significant problem here. And we believe that because Biomet didn't provide that kind of evidence, the lower court's ruling on overbreath was legally erroneous for that reason as well. Turning to the first argument, which is factor 3 of Intel, factors 2 and 3, 2 being whether the foreign jurisdiction is receptive, and 3 being whether there's a proof-gathering restriction, are interrelated. The magistrate judge ultimately said that factor 2 favored Horaeus, but factor 3 went against Horaeus. However, the appropriate standard, as articulated by every court to address this issue, is that there has to be authoritative proof, an authoritative statement from the judicial, legislative, or executive branch that either the evidence wouldn't be received by the foreign tribunal and or that it would offend their notions of proof-gathering. The Euromapa case in the Second Circuit is the leading case that articulates that standard, and of course the Supreme Court in Intel approvingly cites Euromapa several times, and every court that has addressed this issue specifically, I believe except for the lower courts here, have adopted that authoritative proof standard. Under that standard, not only is there no authoritative proof that Germany wouldn't want this evidence, there's authoritative proof of exactly the opposite. In this very case, the German court has specifically delayed proceedings to get evidence from the United States, in this case and from the related appeal that went to the Third Circuit.
Right. Are you going to get what you need? Is Horaeus going to get what it needs from the Third Circuit proceedings? Explain to me the relationship between those.
The Third Circuit proceeding involves a third-party ESCAM.
Right.
And the hope was that we would get substantial evidence supporting the case from the Third Circuit. The Third Circuit has ordered that production. That production is still ongoing. In that production, I can't talk about the specifics because there's a protective order. What I can say is that production has only led to about 100 pages so far of actual material being produced. There are tremendous gaps in the production there that rival the Nixon tapes in importance and obviousness, and there may very well be motions to compel more evidence. It is not clear exactly what's ultimately going to result from that case. What is clear, however, is that the specific communications from Biomet to ESCAM appear to have been destroyed. ESCAM's document retention policy, they have explained that side of the communication has been destroyed. So it is unlikely that we would get in the ESCAM case most of the critical stuff we're seeking here.
All right, and speaking of other courts, I know there's a reference in the briefs to what was going on in Europe on September 30th.
Correct.
What happened?
What happened was the parties met, they argued, I believe, for about 3 hours about the case. The court decided not to enter judgment for either party. the court effectively, it didn't stay proceedings, but it sort of said, we want to wait for evidence from the United States. And so it has not set any further deadlines, and it is awaiting evidence from both the Third Circuit, the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, and Eschem, and for this case. The lawyers for Biomet in Germany have continually insisted that the court there try to impose strict deadlines. They want a 3 or 4 week deadline for any new evidence, and the court has said, no, we're not going to do that. And the court did specifically say that it is interested and it wants to see the evidence from the United States. So that's the status of that proceeding. If there is any doubt whatsoever about the lack of proof-gathering restrictions, the evidence in this case, the affidavits by the legal experts, Dr. Klinker on Horaeus' side and even Mr. Wietzel on the other side, do not dispute that Germany can receive any evidence generated in the United States.
How would this work? So is the idea that your discovery here and in Pennsylvania will enable you to collect a bunch of documents which you can then submit to the German court that is has identified documents?
Yes, partially, but the German court will receive anything we give them. There is no provision, there's no admissibility threshold in the German courts. Everything we would present, they would consider. They wouldn't have to agree with it, but they'd have to admit it in their proceedings. It's, of course, just a bench proceeding, no juries. And so the court would consider that evidence. And if the court believed that that evidence was as compelling as Horaeus believes it will be, it would effectively enter summary judgment for Horaeus.
I mean, what if you gave them, you know, a million emails? They must have some sort of screening device. I mean, granted, their admissibility rules are much looser than ours, but they must have some way of limiting the documentation.
If we gave them a million emails, we would be foolish because they might try to skim through it, but ultimately I think the judges would throw up their hands. I think that, you know, they have to admit it. That doesn't mean they have to read each line of each document. And there's no formal rule that limits that kind of thing, but practically that would not be a wise move. The idea is to find what we believe are the smoking gun documents that show our specific ingredients, formulations, and protocols in their files. And we think they'll be there. We know they had access to them through the joint venture that they acquired, and we have very strong reason to believe that they incorporated our trade secrets into their bone cements. And so that's the idea. I would just note for the court, as we've expressed, I think, pretty completely in the briefs, that case after case addressing 1782 with respect to Germany have granted the petitions. The documents have been submitted to the German court. In fact, I represented Procter & Gamble in the case we cited from the Eastern District of Wisconsin, and in that case we got documents, we submitted, and they were accepted by the German court.
But you have sued Biomet in some U.S. state the way you sued in Pennsylvania?
Well, we sued Eschem in Pennsylvania. We brought Biomet's
Pardon?
Yeah, Biomet's located in Indiana, so that's where we brought the action. Biomet Inc. is located in Indiana.
Well, this is your discovery action, but could you have brought your
trade secret
case there rather than in Germany?
I'm not sure we could have. One issue is that
You'd get jurisdiction.
Personal jurisdiction, yeah, but I believe under a number of the agreements at issue, there are choice of law clauses that indicate German law, and I believe Germany is a forum. I'm not 100% sure about that. If it's important, we could submit a supplemental brief. But
idle curiosity.
These parties have. There was another lawsuit already. These parties have sued each other a number of times in the European courts. Correct?
They have, and it's because Horaeus for 50 years has been the gold standard in these products, and Biomet has been trying to get that business, and they weren't able to do it until Horaeus believes they stole our trade secrets. The other proceeding was about a product called Septapol,
right?
And that is, as I understand it, it is basically a bone cement that also includes antibiotics as part of the product. And the reason that they're related is that we believe the same base copolymers that we contend Biomet stole for the products at issue here, the Palicos line of products, were also used in Septapol. So we believe they're related. And, the original request to the magistrate judge included some requests about Septapol. It was certainly possible at the time that we might have amended our complaint in Germany to specifically talk about it. But in all events, under 1782, there's no restriction that we limit the request to a particular foreign proceeding. In fact, as the Supreme Court said in Intel, the foreign proceeding doesn't even have to be existing or even imminent, just contemplated. Turning to the second point, the twin aims of the statute. The statute encourages efficient and liberal production of discovery in the United States to foreign jurisdictions that all of them have less liberal discovery procedures than the United States. The United States is the most liberal discovery jurisdiction in the world. And the whole point of the statute is to use our procedures, which are liberal, which are well thought out and efficient, and provide that discovery to foreign tribunals. As a corollary to that, we hope that the foreign tribunals will see our example and will liberalize their discovery systems. And exactly that's what has happened. The one provision in the ZPO, the German Civil Procedure Code, that allows them to order the production of very specific documents is new. That was only enacted in the last few years, and we believe largely in response to the example that the United States and to some extent other common law countries have shown in allowing liberal discovery. So it's working. The magistrate judge, unfortunately, in this case, specifically, this is at the short appendix at page 24 and 25, has this colloquy where he says, I understand there are these principles, but these are four factors, and if I find you don't win under the four factors, I don't care about the principles. That's not an appropriate analysis here. The principles are the guiding ultimate criteria. The four factors help you analyze the specifics of a case under those principles. And our view is, and I think the courts have routinely said this, the premise is you get the discovery unless there's an awfully good reason not to. The best case that shows an awfully good reason not to is actually a German case. It's the Schmitz case from the Second Circuit. In that case, there was an ongoing German legal proceeding, criminal proceeding, against a party. And people who might have been witnesses in that ongoing German proceeding wanted to get documents under 1782 here. The prosecutor in Bonn and then the Ministry of Justice of Germany wrote letters to the court that said, please, don't mess up my criminal investigation. Don't give them the documents. And in that circumstance, they didn't. And that was perfectly appropriate because you had an authoritative government statement saying this is going to wreck something going on in our country. But in every other case involving Germany, which were civil cases, the ultimate discovery has been produced. The final point I want to make before I reserve time is on overbreath. The courts have said Intel embraced this. It cited the Urubapa case for this point. You should narrow the requests, not reject them outright. Requests number 1 through 4, everyone has admitted and agreed that they should be produced. Moreover, if you look at the ultimate requests, the final version, we're seeking stuff about two products, specifically about two products, about the authorizations and submissions to government agencies about the two products, and then simply the valuation of the joint venture. I would urge the court, these requests are narrower than probably 99.9% of the requests in common litigation.
It's quite a long time span, though, isn't it? 15 years? Or?
It is, but that's sort of the development path of some of these polymers. What we want to show is what they knew then, what they knew when they got our trade secrets, and what they knew afterwards.
Judge Nekterlein and Judge Miller did take a pretty hard look at the requests, and their conclusions were that they were anything but narrowly tailored. Is it really the district judge's job to do the tailoring? You're suggesting that that's what should have happened in this case.
They're supposed to work with the parties to tailor it. One of the problems here is that Biomet steadfastly refused to meet and confer or discuss any narrowing whatsoever. Their position was, you don't get anything. We're not going to talk to you about narrowing.
And you never had a meeting with their lawyers about this.
And I don't believe they would ever agree to talk about it, no. We called multiple times. We urged them, please, let's get together and do this, and they wouldn't do it. And so to answer your question directly, it's the court with the parties that are supposed to narrow. We think the original requests weren't too broad in this context, given that this is, you know, worth hundreds of millions of dollars. It's a super complicated case, and we were all only asking about the 11 bone cement products that we think they stole, but we've narrowed that down to the two most important ones.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rosenberg. Mr. Howard?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Before I get into my prepared text, I did want to address some of the arguments and facts that were claimed by opposing counsel. First and foremost, and I guess I'll work backward, regarding the meet and confer, the record is absent of any proof of any requests by Heraeus' counsel for meet and confer. There was one request for such a meet and confer that was actually agreed upon, that was with me and a different lawyer than the one that's arguing with you today. And the reason it did not go forward is because it was on the very day, supposed to occur on the very day that the district court made its ruling that reaffirmed the magistrate judge's finding that the discovery was not appropriate. That's the first point I wanted to clarify.
Well, are you saying they're lying, they didn't make any requests to meet and confer?
Counsel's comment was that there were numerous requests to have such discussions. There were no such numerous requests.
So you're saying he's lying.
I'm saying perhaps
he's
misinformed. And also the record.
How could he be misinformed?
That's a very good question, Your Honor.
He wasn't trial counsel, you're saying? I think that's what you're saying.
The meet and confer that I was supposed to have was with Mr. Canala, who is not the counsel that's being discussing things here.
And when you say that the date that it was supposed to happen was the day that Judge Miller affirmed Judge Neckerlein, was that the first time he did so or the second time he did so?
I believe it was the first time.
I want to say
it was August of 2009.
And after that, the parties, they fell back into their positions and went on, and 9 months later, a second round with the same result. In the meantime, no meets or confers of any kind.
Judge, I can tell you this. Having been present at the conference where there was a discussion about a meet and confer, I had a conversation with Mr. Canala and two other lawyers that were at the conference, and they said, look, we're going to narrow this down. How would you like us to present it? And I said, well, present it however you'd like. We'll take a look at them.
Is it your view that some compromise could have been reached here?
No, Your Honor.
Your client would have been willing to produce some narrow class of documents that would address this issue of the alleged, trade secret theft?
Your Honor, I don't know that necessarily a compromise could be reached, and here's why, if I may. The background that counsel has represented to you is not accurate with respect to the lawsuits. It's very important, and the district court and the magistrate judge noted this, that the way this suit came about by Heraeus in Germany is that they only brought this suit for alleged trade secret misappropriation after there was a lawsuit filed against them for anti-competition. And the transaction between Biomet and the other entity, which Heraeus claims was the basis for this trade secret information that Biomet supposedly had, was over 3 years prior to this. So you had the sale, you had Heraeus getting sued, and then you have Heraeus bringing the action in Germany that we're talking about right now. So that's very important because it paints the clear and accurate picture of what's been going on between the parties.
The anti-competition lawsuit, that was a challenge to Heraeus' refusal to continue providing bone cement products.
That's correct.
That was the alleged anti-competition.
Right. That was the original lawsuit that was filed because there was this long-standing arrangement.
Right.
And then Heraeus, when there was this joint venture that was created, it went to raise its prices by between 380 and 560%, which is inappropriate under the European laws. But the second point that I think is very important to point out is that counsel said the Euro MIPA case is so significant. Well, it's very interesting that he also said all the cases have applied this or followed what Europea did. And frankly, that was several years before Intel was ever even decided.
Did you state in your brief that it was false that you had refused to meet and confer with them?
I believe the way we state it, Your Honor, is that their meet and confer allegations are dramatically overstated.
You said that in your brief?
Yes, sir.
That it was what, dramatically what?
I believe the words were significantly or dramatically overstated, Your Honor.
That's a hedge. That's a hedge.
One never likes to call out opposing counsel.
Look, that's not what you just said to us orally. You said there were no requests.
No, Your Honor, what I said was there was a request, and I was supposed to participate in it. And the reason it did not go forward is because the judge came down with his decision that day. And the exact language in our brief, Your Honor, was vastly overstated, is the specific language.
And that's quite different from what you said. Vastly overstated is not I'm worried about what you're saying orally compared to what's in your brief.
Right.
Let me ask you, did you ever try to particularize your objections to the burdensome of the discovery by saying, you know, we'd have to hire the 100 contract lawyer? You know how these things are done.
Well, Your Honor, it appears...
Did the judge or the magistrate judge an idea of what exactly the burdens are and how the discovery might be cut down to a reasonable burden on you?
Well, to answer that question, Judge, it's important to look at the history of what occurred. The magistrate judge looked at the discovery on its face and said it was crushingly overbroad, et cetera.
I understand that. It's a standard discovery request. This is a very complicated case. I can certainly see you're coming back and saying it's too burdensome and we have to cut out this and that and we shouldn't have to go back 15 years or we should do this on a sampling basis or what. That would be fine, but just to wave your hand at it and say, oh, this is too burdensome.
Well, Judge,
see cases like this.
A couple of points, if I may.
In South Bend, but you know,
1782
complex discovery, and
if I may
so
respond,
why don't you tell the magistrate judge, look, we don't want to hire 100 contract lawyers to handle this. We want this cut down. And they don't really need this. And they don't need that. And they don't need the other thing.
The reason we didn't say that, Judge, is because that argument was waived by Horaeus. It was never made before the magistrate judge or the district court judge. So they
don't understand what you need. I don't understand waiver. Look, they're saying we need this stuff. And you can come back and say, no, it's too much and you don't need it. That's fine. But that's different from just saying no discovery and then invoking 1782. As your base, I mean, this is really a Rule 26 case, too much discovery. That's fine, not in a 782. I don't see what 1782 has to do with it at all.
Well, Your Honor, the application was made under 1782, and this is a proceeding that's pending
in Germany.
Well, it has to
be made, you know, it has to be, obvious, because it's foreign, but because it's going to be in a foreign court. But the German court apparently is happy to receive all this stuff, so...
Well, Your Honor,
burden is on you. Forget the German court is worried. You're worried. The burden is on you. It seems to me you have to do something to show that it's unreasonable.
Well, actually, Your Honor, if I may, that's the third point I wanted to clarify. The counsel has represented to you that the German court has said we're going to wait for the evidence in the U.S. Again, I hate to have to go down this road, but that is not what the German court said. In fact, I have German counsel here who is of record in the German case.
This is getting away from the papers. Look, you could go to the German court. This case, how long has the case been in the German court?
I believe 2 years.
Well, why didn't you go to the German court and say, look, this Horaeus, they're going to the United States and they're exploiting American ridiculous discovery systems, and they're going to flood you with millions of documents. They're going to drive you crazy. So why don't you just tell them, you know, bug off. We don't do that in Germany. Why don't you tell them that? That would be like the Second Circuit case they cited.
Well,
apparently the German court, you know, is willing at least to wait and see what Horaeus comes up with, and then they'll decide how much of it they want to look at.
Judge, I'm sorry to have to revisit the point, but and I'd be happy to submit documentation afterward.
It's a little late for submitting documentation.
The German court did not state, as counsel has represented.
I know that, but I'm asking you, why, if you really think that the German court doesn't want this stuff, and clearly if the German court would say, no, we don't like this discovery stuff, We're not going to look at anything that Horaeus finds in the United States. That's not how we do business. If they said that would be fine, and of course that would end this litigation. So since you don't want this discovery, why do you ask the German court to say that?
Well, Judge, what you're essentially asking me then is there
I made myself clear, and you don't have to restate my question.
I'm just trying to make sure I understand your question.
I asked you, why didn't you go to the German court and tell Horaeus we're not going to listen to any, we're not going to take any documents that you find in the United States using these terrible American discovery procedures.
Well, Judge, because that would be basically something under the second factor of Intel, authoritative proof, and we didn't...
Look, I don't understand. I ask you a simple question. You start throwing factors at me.
No, I'm trying to...
Go to the German court and say, tell these people to stop. They're this burdensome, and they're gonna flood you with all this junk, and you're going to be driven crazy. Right? Just say that, and then they'll.
Well, Judge,
we
didn't do that. To answer your question, we did not do that because there is no requirement under the law for us to do that first.
That's
second,
a really bad reply. I hope you have a better one.
Second, under Babcock, which we believe is the better reasoned decision, it's a 2008 decision of District Court of Massachusetts, there is no authoritative proof requirement on the respondent. The better course here would be that the petitioner, if it thinks it is entitled to this information and if it thinks the foreign tribunal will receive it, since it is seeking the information abroad, perhaps it should be the party that goes to the tribunal to seek that. There is no burden.
It doesn't make any sense. They obviously think that they're going to get some evidence admissible in the German court. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing this.
Well, Your Honor, then they would have and should have properly pursued evidence in Germany.
Comfortable with it. The German court appears willing to take foreign documents. And if you want to head them off, then you go to them. And you're the ones who are opposing discovery. Why don't you just... go to the German court.
Well, Judge, the premise of your statement in question.
There's no evidence the German court would be unhappy with having the fruits of this discovery submitted to it.
Actually, there are cases that support the proposition that the German court is not happy. In fact, the case the counsel relied on, when the German government spoke, it specifically said, "No, thank you. We do not want."
He discussed that. That was a special case. That there's no indication that there's some German governmental interest in this that would make them want to prevent discovery results from being introduced in Germany.
Well, the only case that either party has cited, Judge, where...
It's not a case question. It's a question. If you really think, you know, the German court won't take this stuff, go and ask them for an order.
Well, Judge, the only decision that I'm aware of where a German court has actually asked a U.S. court for information.
Why would the German court ask for anybody for information? They're sitting there waiting to see what Herraus presents to them. They'll decide whether they want to listen, how much of it they want to read.
Well, actually, it would be a German authority in this case, in the Rhein-Neckar-Kreis case that we cited.
Right.
That's the only instance where under 1782 any German authority asked for information specifically.
It's not a question of asking for information. It's a question of receiving information submitted as a result of American discovery. And there's no indication that the German court wouldn't accept it or would feel offended at people having gone and looked for documents in the United States.
Well, Your Honor, again, the representation made is not accurate in terms of the German court's receptivity to this. That is not the state of the situation in Germany at all. And what we're talking about here, the proper discussion is, with respect to what happened and why, is the abuse of discretion standard. And there has been absolutely nothing presented by her.
Well, there's clearly a misunderstanding on the part of the magistrate judge. He thinks that if a foreign legal system doesn't have American discovery rules, it will be unhappy to receive any documents that are obtained in U.S. discovery.
Actually, Judge, if I may, both Judge Nechterlein and the district court Judge Miller both said that neither of them were replacing their views of Comity with the United States Supreme Court's view as set forth in Intel. So there is no – this is not a discussion here in terms of what
– in Intel to suggest that German courts won't take American discovery results.
Well, Judge, actually, I would submit that the Supreme Court's comment with respect to receptivity
– Germany won't take it. What foreign country would take American discovery results?
I don't know, Your Honor, but perhaps
would any foreign country, to your knowledge, be more receptive than Germany?
Judge, to answer that question, I would
say. Does any foreign country have American discovery standards?
Not that I'm aware of, Judge, but to answer the question.
Which foreign country do you think would accept, or do you think 1782 was just completely vacuous and has had no consequences because no foreign country will take American discovery?
No, I think 1782 has merit, but I also
think
that the.
What's special about Germany that it doesn't take this stuff?
Your Honor, the problem here is we don't know what Germany will take because counsel have not pursued that track.
We don't know. Why not let the discovery go forward and then they restrict it if you want to make a showing that this is really burdensome? Then they take their documents to the German court. German court says, no, we don't like this stuff. And then they've wasted all their time, right? You'd be happy with that.
Well, Judge, the German procedures actually are illustrative of their points of view. For example, under Hague Convention
is
Article
2. Is Germany more restrictive about discovery than other foreign countries?
Your Honor, I would have to say yes and no to that answer. It would depend on the foreign country.
You have no idea. Name one foreign country that has less restrictive discovery standards than Germany.
Less restrictive?
Yes.
I would
more
likely
hospitable to American discovery.
Having some experience with the UK, I can answer as to the UK. They are a little bit more liberal about what they would allow. But I guess to answer these questions, Judge, the best course would have been for Horaeus to file this discovery in Germany to see if it got anything. It hasn't
filed discovery in Germany?
Yes, sir.
It knows that German discovery. German doesn't have discovery.
Yeah, actually, Your Honor, that is a misstatement in their briefs. There is discovery.
Yeah, but it's very limited. I mean, the whole point of 1782 is to enable these foreign litigants to do discovery in the United States. You can't tell them they have to go to the foreign country and do.
Horaeus has explained why it didn't want to do discovery in Germany. The restrictions, you have to be specific about what document you're requesting, and even then it sounds as though it's not a very liberal discovery protocol. I'm still back at, did anything, again, no meet and confer in the second nine-month period? After Judge Miller ruled the first time and before he ruled the second time, still no meet and confer that whole time?
Your Honor, there was no other meet and confer. And again, from our perspective, the problem here was that the discovery requests were so unbelievably broad,
right, and
we had we had four different decisions by two different federal court judges that said this discovery is wrong.
Well, you had two decisions at that point. I'm talking about
point. Yes.
You know, the argument that a discovery request is overbroad is one, as you can imagine, I hear very frequently, and I ordinarily expect people to say, Judge, they're not entitled to the sun, the moon, and the stars, but here are a couple of planets. And that's what I would have expected in this case, that Biomet would have said, ridiculously overbroad, all they need is X and Y. And it might have been that was far less than they were looking for, but that would have ended the controversy.
Well, Judge, let me put it in this context. One of the considerations under Intel that the Supreme Court looked at was parity. And there are provisions in Germany, as counsel stated in his opening remarks, there are provisions in Germany for discovery, and they are getting better. One of the considerations of the U.S. Supreme Court in Intel was the issue of parity.
I don't think you're responding to Judge Pallmeyer at all.
I'm trying to, Judge. The issue of parity is this. If Horaeus could...
How is that responding to Judge? What does parity have to do with
it? I'm trying to explain why we wouldn't have done the meet and confer on top of the two decisions from the court that said that the discovery was burdensome. The reason is because if Horaeus was allowed to come to the U.S. and secure discovery, there would be no mechanism for Biomet to perhaps get identical discovery in Germany. And the Supreme Court specifically said in its consideration of the factors on top of the four that were enumerated that parity and comity and burdensome are to be considered. The burdensomeness of the discovery are all factors
did
to be considered.
Parity in your brief?
Yes, we did, Your Honor.
Got it.
And couldn't Biomet have engaged in its own 1782, or that wouldn't have worked?
Well, Your Honor, Horaeus chose the forum to sue in Germany.
Well, did you tell the magistrate judge and the district judge that you had this parity problem and that you wouldn't meet and confer with them unless they agreed to make comparable production of their documents to you?
Judge, I'm not aware of any such conversation taking place with respect to specific.
Isn't that the logical solution? That is, if you feel that providing discovery to them would put you at a disadvantage, you say to the judge, look, we don't want to be put at this disadvantage, so you condition their discovery on our being able to make comparable discovery.
Your Honor, that is certainly something that the district court and the magistrate judge could have done.
No, that's something you should have asked them. That's not an excuse for not meeting and conferring. You had a perfectly good position, which is, yeah, you'll meet and confer, you'll give them some stuff along the lines Judge Pallmeyer was suggesting, but you want reciprocity.
Well, Judge, I think the place for that type of discussion to have taken place would have been in Germany, where the cases are proceeding, and there is discovery proceeding
that
right now.
What it is nothing. They can agree to whatever discovery they want, even if it wouldn't be required by a German court, right? They just say, all right, you give us these documents, we'll give you X documents, right? It's just a private deal. You don't need the German court involved.
Well, Your Honor, that is certainly an option. But, again, these items were not raised. And I know that you were not receptive to the waiver point, but you're asking why these did not occur. It's because
I'm asking you why you didn't do something, not why they didn't do something.
Well, because there was no discussion
about
it.
Your argument is meet and confer. No, you don't want to do that because you can't get discovery of them in Germany. Well, there was a very easy way for you to deal with that.
Well, that's not why we didn't respond, Your Honor. We didn't respond because we had four decisions from two federal judges that said we didn't have to, and because the discovery was crushingly overburdensome. But with respect to the waiver argument, the whole discussion about how many megabytes or how many boxes or how much time it would take never came to fruition because these arguments, as I noted, were waived before the magistrate judge and the district court judge.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Howard. So, Mr. Rosenberg, how much time does he have?
Well,
a minute.
Let's see if you can talk Judge Foster out of his position.
Try not to.
My mind is open.
With respect to whether I'm a liar, I'd like to talk about the record for a minute. April 8th, 2009 letter at JA 476 through 478. This is a letter to Mr. Howard from Mr. Canala, my partner. I look forward to speaking with you about this matter at 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern this afternoon. This was the meeting that was scheduled and never happened. Now, let's talk about the second, after the second decision. Letter on August 31st, 2009 at JA 962, again to Mr. Howard, from Mr. Canala. To the extent that there remains any confusion or ambiguity in your mind as to what documents are being sought by these document requests, please let us know at your earliest convenience, and we will schedule a time to meet and confer about them. Next. Declaration of local counsel John Carr in the record, JA 405 through 407. On February 19th, 2009, after receipt of Palmer's notice of appearance, I left a voice message, this is the other side's local counsel, requesting that he return my call in order to initiate a dialogue regarding the discovery sought from respondents. On February 20th, 2009, at 1:37 p.m., having not received a return call from Palmer, I sent an email to him indicating I had left a voicemail message the previous day and again requesting that he contacted me. On February 25th, 2009, at 8:50 a.m., having still had no contact from Palmer, I sent another email to Palmer requesting a return call. In such email, I also advised Palmer, among other things, and that's something irrelevant there. I mean, there were a series of phone calls by local counsel for our side to local counsel for their side. There were letters between Mr. Howard and my partner, Mr. Canala. There was a clear intention expressed by Horaeus to meet and confer. And Judge Nuchterlein said after the second petition was filed that he wanted the parties to meet and confer. That is what precipitated the August 31, 2009 letter that I mentioned. If I could briefly address the parity issue, First of all, parity is not an intel factor. It is not a critical thing to examine. Second and most importantly, there's no parity problem here. We're alleging that they stole our trade secrets. Any discovery they got from us would be marginal at best on that issue. We've never refused to engage in discovery if they were willing to give us what we would like, but they've simply never started the dialogue. Moreover, they've never sought any discovery in Germany whatsoever, even under the very limited procedures that exist in Germany. Just a final word about what happened at the September 30th hearing. Despite Mr. Howard's statements to the contrary, I have been assured by our German counsel, who's in the courtroom here, Dr. Klinkert, that at that hearing, the presiding judge specifically said that he was interested in the discovery, that he was not going to be putting any deadlines on the proceeding, and that they were awaiting discovery from the United States. In these circumstances, we ask you reverse.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Rosenberg, and thank Mr. Howard as well.